Welcome, listeners, to a brand new bonus episode of Oh My Word Podcast. And today, special treat, what we're doing today is you're going behind the scenes to look a little bit at the making of, one of my books, Heart of a Hunter, one of the End of Ever After series. I'm going to call it the fifth installment because really these books are part of a companion series, even though the best way to read them is in the order they were published, because some books do have spoilers a little bit about what occurs in other books. But even if you do read them out of order, I would still recommend reading all of them, of course, because it's all about seeing how these stories were retold. Because the End of Ever After series is a series of fairy tale retellings, and Meyer described it the best by calling them memoir-style fairy tale retellings, because the structure of all of them, if you've heard any of these behind the scenes yet for some of the other books, is that they always take the regular fairy tale that we're familiar with, and what it sort of does is fill in the blanks, add more to the story, so that if you would take away all of the new things that were added, you still see the original story within it. And we're doing Heart of a Hunter today because it just recently came out in audiobook, a fantastic audiobook, which was read by Nathan Weiland, who was in our last bonus episode. So now it's available in print, ebook version, and audiobook. So you could collect all three. Anyway, let's get into it. So Heart of a Hunter is a Snow White retelling. And it's actually funny because even though it was the last one written, as we're working on these, my editor was like, this one could have been one of the first ones in this series. Why was it one of the last ones? Well, because first of all, it's one of the last ones written, and the other books were already coming out at that point. But also because this was an interesting thing that I learned as I was writing the series is that so many things were able to click so well into place almost because I had already written them, because I already had gone through these other stories. The fifth book to me was like a nice wrap up of all of them, which actually raises the question, just for all the writers out there, if you know you're going to write a series, is it better to just write them one at a time, or is it better to try to write as many as you can? Because as you write each book in a series, you understand a world better, you develop a world better. There are certain things that you could plant and refer to and come back to or explain or give origins for or give sequels to sort of within the other books. So once a book is published, you can't change what's already been published. And if you haven't written the other books yet, you are bound and limited to whatever that first book says. Right? So you can't contradict it unless the contradiction makes sense. Like, oh, they always thought it was this way, but now we'll tell you the truth. But you can't just make up a contradiction that doesn't have any logic to it, or else readers are like, what's going on here? They're not being consistent. So this series, a few of the books were written together, and the last few were being worked on already after the first ones were coming out. And the other funny part about this was that books number 2 and 3, which one is the Rumpelstiltskin story and the other one is The Little Mermaid, those are both kind of contenders for, oh, these are the best books in the series so far. And then when this book came out, once the publisher saw it and the editor saw it, they're like, oh, okay, never mind. This was definitely the best one from all of them. But I don't know, it was just that they, you know, certain things about the characters that spoke to them, but I think a lot of it just had to do with once you're wrapping up the story and understand the world so much better, also once your editor has led you to so many things, you can now build on that. So I think that's kind of what it was. And I'll actually mention certain things that I realized as I was writing it. So a little spoilery-ish, even though we all know the story of Snow White. So now, with all these books in their retellings, they all have a certain sort of theme to them, the greater idea that's being followed within the story. So for example, the Rumpelstiltskin story was about lies and truth and what's in a name and how do we define ourselves and how does our name shape us and different things like that. And the Little Mermaid story had a lot about, well, it was kind of spiritual because the Hans Christian Andersen, the original version of it, is a much more spiritual story. So what does it mean to have a soul or to try to get something like reality, delusion, all these sort of things. And you know, the inside versus the outside, the Beauty and the Beast has a lot of anger. Can anger lead to how destructive it could be, like cold anger versus fiery hot anger. And the Cinderella book we haven't done yet because that one's lagging in the audiobook production. So once that's done, we'll return to the Cinderella book. And then maybe we'll even discuss about there are certain structures of each of the books that were patterned on the way that the Cinderella book was structured. So for this book, that it's the Snow White story, but it's told from a huntsman's point of view. So from the 5 books, 3 of them are told from the princess's point of view, like from the female character point of view, and 2 of them are told from the princess slash the male point of view. They're not necessarily princesses slash princes to begin with. Some of them yes, some of them no, depending on the story. So this one, it's the huntsman, right? The huntsman that's sent to take out Snow White before he doesn't. Not a spoiler. We all know the Snow White story. Anyways, so we have the central idea. There's a few central ideas. A lot of the story structure goes back to and builds upon. So one of the main ones is this idea of duty and responsibility. If you've got a certain position, what does it mean to stick to that sort of position versus where there's area, as you say, to move around, which we'll go into a little bit more in a second. There's a big theme of a control of the self, to have mind over matter, I guess you could say, mind over the heart. There's a lot about that. What's the right balance for it? Because there can be extremes on both sides, or more favorable balances, depending on what the mix is. And then there's also an idea of perception, which goes into this sort of thing, but especially because of duty, responsibility, mind over matter, and all these things, how that can alter our perception, or it leads us to look at the world in a certain sort of way, which then doesn't preclude other views of the world and what that can lead to then. There's also a little bit about communication, different sort of things. The punchline, actually, with all these different elements that we brought in, the ending of this story, which is the ending kind of the entire series, that these fairy tales that were rewritten to be a little bit more realistic and for what could go into a relationship, what could destroy a relationship, things like that, is that many of us love the fairy tales, or many of us love this idea of things working out so beautifully and the happily ever after and overcoming the obstacles and things like that. But if there's anything that can be learned from this whole series, is that happily ever after is not just something that occurs and it's not just a progression. Happily ever after is not magic. It's something that we create ourselves, and it's something that we have to work on every single day for it to become as much of a reality as it could. Because it's not absolute either. And it's sort of when the balance of the overwhelming good over the struggles, the challenges, and things like that, that's the human happily ever after. That's kind of what it goes for. Okay, so going into the story, we have Damien, who is the huntsman. And he's part of this like elite group. It would almost be like the super soldiers, but it's like an elite group of kind of like the Navy SEALs, and they are under the Queen. So the Queen's huntsmen, that she has these very elite, very hard to get into, very highly, highly trained and highly skilled group of guards who protect her, carry to her will, etc. And this is kind of there in the kingdom. It's a balance to the king's power. Because as long as the queen has the huntsman, she's like forever protected. And she can never just be pushed over, aside, ignored, all that sort of stuff. So Damon's father is the captain of the huntsmen, and he is considered the greatest that ever was. Damon looks up to his father, but everyone, you know, he is, I don't know if these stories about him are true or not, because it was just so fantastic and so amazing, and everything about him was just so great. And from when he's a little child, his father's already deciding that he's training him to be a huntsman. Damien really never had a childhood because of that. All his life has just been about allegories, stories that are supposed to all teach him and guide him. But there's no like playtime either, because you must be trained. And you'll be trained by intellectuals, and you'll be trained by thieves, right? Because to be sneaky, to get in and out, all this sort of stuff. Skip ahead, of course, Damien does become a huntsman. And he is considered like, if his dad's the best, he's the next best that ever was. He's a historic huntsman. Because of just, that's his whole life was dedicated to that. His entire identity was to become a huntsman. So that's part of the duty responsibility thing, is that he shaped and formed his whole identity around that. Which is also why eventually he doesn't know how to find himself or figure himself out without having that identity. Because eventually what's going to happen is that when it's time for him to kill Snow White, and then he sees her and she's so beautiful and so everything, and he looks at her and says, like, why would I kill her? And he chooses not to, he all of a sudden is like, how could I not have done my queen's bidding, right? He has this whole guilt that starts to grow inside of him, because the queen is the queen, and my job is to only serve my queen. And if I didn't serve my queen, then what am I? What am I worth? What have I become? Instead of saying, there are times when what is asked is not okay anymore. The queen is only a human. And the things that she's asking to just kill an innocent person, that's a line I won't cross, not because I'm a lesser person, but because I'm more of a person, right? I'm more and not less to have made that decision. So that's when he first starts to struggle kind of with himself, which affects but eventually occurs, because he has to figure himself out and realize that, sure, you could be the huntsman and super trained and all that kind of stuff, and they all get this little vial, that magical ability enhancer, then become a huntsman, which, side note, that goes back to the purple theme, that purple's magic in this universe, which I think I've mentioned before, but they all get these purple rings around their eyes because of the magic that's enhanced their abilities. Anyways, so he can't figure himself out, and that affects a lot of his later decisions until he learns to accept, like, I'm not only a huntsman, I am not only either this or either that. Like, there's me, and then there's the way that my skills, my values, my all the things that make me, the way that they look as a huntsman, the way that they look if I apply them to being a prince, the way they look if I apply them to this role or that role or whatever, all these things. That's when he kind of eventually learns, even though it takes him quite a journey to get there, and there's a little bit of a rocky road. of course. Now, the way the story plays out is when he chooses not to kill Snow White, who in this story is called Lila, he instead takes her to the dwarves' cottage, right, that they should protect her because he can't always be the one protecting her. She needs a place that she could stay. He has to go back to the queen to pretend like he killed her, all this different kind of stuff. So he ends up leaving there, her there for a while till eventually the mirror, you know, mirror on the wall gives her away. Then Damien has to go on the run because now the queen knows that you didn't fulfill her wishes. And this is also when he begins to start learning about himself. He actually eventually ends up in Azar's castle when Azar is battling being the beast. So that's the beast character. So he eventually ends up taking refuge with this banished prince. And it's they're purposely put there together to show this kind of dichotomy between them. That Azar, who's got so much anger and he turns into this beast whenever he's so angry and he's trying to fight for his humanity, the human side of him versus the beast side of him, always in a struggle, these two parts of him always at war with each other. And then you have Damien, who's trained to be a huntsman and they're trained to be the will of the queen, the law of the queen. They deal with a lot of what they call quote unquote bad apples, you know, the rotted apples. That's what they deal with, removing that from the kingdom and part of a very secret, covert way of keeping the kingdom safe. And his whole thing, it's also the human element to it, but it's we have to remember that just because we can do all these things, we are but human, right? And that's also a recurring theme, that your expectations of yourself are not realistic because you are forgetting that you are only a man. You're forgetting that you are not this perfectly sculpted being. You are only a man. And a man will, at times, have to battle the mind and the heart, or the heart, figure out value, emotion, reason, all these sort of things. You have to remember this is part of the human condition. Because Damien is just... he doesn't get it because he's been so focused on just being a huntsman. He's been so focused on serving the queen that, again, he doesn't know how to deal with things. So eventually, he has to come back to the forest and he finds Princess Lila, Snow White, in the coffin, in the glass casket because, assumedly, she's dead. But what happened is, and this is actually goes back to the original tale, is that when she took the bite of the apple, the queen reveals herself and so she doesn't swallow properly and she chokes on it. So that actually keeps her alive. So it's not like a resurrection thing that occurs. She's actually still alive, just barely, because the poison is slowly seeping into her. She's slowly not breathing anymore, but she's not actually dead because she choked on the apple. When he bends over and the dwarves are like, oh, look at the hero return and his true love's kiss, blah, 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 all this beautiful stuff. In the meantime, he's actually just getting the apple out of her throat, and that's how he awakens her because he gets her to stop choking on the apple and the poison that's there. Okay, it's not so simple. They have to get someone to come take the poison out and all that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So this is part of referring to the beginning about when you're writing series and you kind of come back on certain things and give origins and sequels. This is one other book that we see Marie in. Marie is Ella's from Cinderella, her fairy godmother. And we see her here because there's one scene in the Cinderella book where Cinderella, there's a poison scene. Not going to say too many details just yet. And we see Marie as someone who can combat poison. Like she's got her magical skills or she's figured out certain poisons and things like that. So Marie is called to help save Lila from the poison. Kind of brings it all together over there. She comes back again later, which, again, you'll have to see the book to figure out where else does she factor into the story. So another character who comes back who we see again is Yarrow. Yarrow is someone who we saw in Human Again. He was kind of someone who guided Azar a little bit. He is a magical... oh, we first saw him in the Rumpelstiltskin story. He is Mage Merlin's mage master. That's the first time we see him. And he comes back again in Beauty and the Beast. And he's again here. From all the characters, him and Damien kind of hit it off the best. Not that they're just, you know, they're not besties for life. Well, actually, they kind of are. There's something about each other they both get. There's just like a unique connection between them. Yara really comes through for Damien a lot. There's sometimes that Damien does him some favors. We don't see everything, but we do see some of this relationship there. So that's a side note over there. Someone who gets brought back. Anyways, after Damien saves Snow White from choking on the apple, they now have to go back to the palace to reinstate Lila. She's the real heir to the throne, not the queen. So they go back, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. There's one scene I'm not going to talk about. Pretty powerful scene. I remember my editors reacted to. It was just, wow, I just read that scene. Like, wow. Maybe not in those exact words, but it was kind of like, wow, okay. Anyways, so what happens? At this point, they say we can't let the kingdom fall into instability. There's a queen, and if you topple the queen, and this princess is supposed to be dead, has come back from the dead. What's going on here? We have to make sure that there's stability in the kingdom, right? That's first and foremost. Always in government and countries, and if you want to make sure that everybody's happy and safe and whatever, you have to make sure there's stability in the upper echelons of power. So what are we going to do? So Lila says, the people will know whatever story we tell them. This is another theme that comes back about how stories are crafted, right? To give a certain kind of perception, and we have the princess who came back and the queen and etc. But if we cast them in a certain way, right, if we tell them certain things, then the people will buy into the story if they like the narrative, is basically what Lila kind of points out. Part of that narrative is that Damien woke her up with true love's kiss. And so that's another thing that Damien, instead of just going with it, he can't handle it because it's not true, right? It's dishonest. He doesn't know how to do that. He's a very straight shooter, Damien. Also because he has excellent aim, but also because he's a very honest, straightforward person. We're in control of ourselves. We can't just give in to fancy and flight and all this sort of stuff. How can I live under this quote-unquote, this lie? And maybe if I'm living under this quote-unquote lie, that means that, you know, maybe Lila doesn't even want me to be here. Maybe she's just playing the part of being like, oh, I'm so excited to get to marry my prince now. You know, maybe it's not true because the rest of it's not true. So how is this true? There's a lot of different stuff that goes in there. So he has to struggle with a lot of that stuff of we're putting out the story to the people, but it's not even true. So what's true anymore? Who am I even more? If I become a prince, then I'm not a huntsman. If I'm not a huntsman, I'm nothing that I was raised to be. Can I make my parents proud like this? Oh, he didn't mention his parents were killed because he didn't do what he was supposed to do. So that's more guilt that's on top of him. And he lets the guilt come in. He lets it weigh down on him. Sort of like, how can I be happy when this one thing led to this one decision I made, which he doesn't yet understand that, no, you made the right decision. And there was no other decision to have made, even with the consequences to follow, because you couldn't have killed this innocent person. So it did lead to the death of the parents, which you feel so guilty about. But it doesn't mean that you can't now redefine and find different meaning or purpose in your life now. It's not, you don't have to just get stuck in the guilt and the grief and the sadness, which is sort of what he does. Till eventually, he goes to help in some of the wars that were mentioned in some of the other books. And eventually he comes back and he starts looking at some of the other fairy, quote unquote, fairy tales around him. And the way each couple's relationship is a little bit different. Each couple's relationship plays out differently. And sort of, do I really want to be like this? Am I really like that if I behave this sort of way? Until eventually, slowly he starts to kind of straighten himself out and then figure out who he wants to be, figure out what's really important, figure out that, you know, the morals and the values and everything that makes him are still there. Just because he's not a huntsman doesn't mean he still doesn't have all the good traits and qualities. And it's the good traits and qualities that would attract Lila to him that make him him. He doesn't have to be a huntsman to always look out for her, right? He just has to be dedicated and devoted to her to look out for her. So it's a lot of things like that. Now, for some of the other things that just get to come in here and get to play out over here, there's one of the stories that's told. There were a lot of either allegories and fables that I pulled from a lot of places. Now I don't really remember where I took them all from. I borrowed them and kind of changed a few details to make it fit these stories because this is all this whole fairy tale realm. So I was pulling in a lot of folklore and things like that. So you have the one story of, this is the rewritten version. I think I switched out some of the animals for it. Damien's dad tells him there was once a wolf who left his cave. The sun casts a shadow, right? Where the sun, the way it was. And he looks at his shadow and says, wow, look at how big I am. I'm so great and so fantastic. I'm so amazing. You know, no one ever crossed such a mighty looking wolf. Then all of a sudden a lion came. And the lion's shadow was so much bigger and he chased the wolf away. So the dad's all like, okay, Damien, what do we learn from the story? What do we learn from the story? A few different lessons, but the one lesson they come to hear is that you focus on the shadow and you forget what the source is. So he says, what do you mean, what's the source? Like, the source is just a man. We are so much smaller than the shadow that we cast. It's a dual lesson that also connects this whole idea of perception, that on the one hand, as these huntsmen, we have to cast a large shadow. There's a mythology around them. There's a sort of unknown about them, which has to be there so that they seem so much larger than who they are, because the people are supposed to be fearful of them. Let's not misbehave so the huntsman doesn't come after us. But at the same time, just because we are casting the shadow, we have to remember that we are just people casting a shadow, right? We cannot become the shadow and we should not be afraid of the shadow. Damien sort of takes that when it comes to him and his relationship with Lila and sort of this story that's out in the kingdom about true love and all this sort of stuff. He turns that all into this massive shadow that's being cast, and he feels like he's standing there as the human in front of the shadow. How can I ever meet these expectations? So it's like, no, you gotta refocus, right? You gotta remember, where is the source? Where is the origin point of these things? Another thing with perception, which actually doesn't necessarily have to do with this, a total side thing. When he goes to Azar, when he goes to the Beast character, so some of the scenes are a little bit partially repeated, just because if you read one book, you haven't read the other, so you still have to know, you know, what's going on in the scene and things like that. Also because of the way you see the scene playing out from each perspective. So the Beast character describes it in his way. Damien describes it in his way. In the Beauty and the Beast telling, in human again, when Damien shows up, like, Azar is so fascinated with him. And he's like, I don't know what he does all day. Sometimes he's here helping us, and sometimes he just goes out. He's probably doing a bunch of huntsman stuff. Because Azaris sees the shadow. And then you have Damon in this book has just spent a lot of time going to the forest and meditating and thinking about my life and where I was. Like, really not. He's on the run. He's not exactly doing huntsman-y stuff at that time. It's just, well, at least I got a kick out of just the different perceptions of Shadow and the Man, I guess you could say, sort of perceptions. Another thing, if you caught on to it, if you've read the book already or heard the book already, there's a part where Damon goes with one of his huntsman friends, Arden, and they go to get a sword for Yarrow. So there's a little bit slight, like, Sword in the Stone imagery is sort of there. But it's also the sword that we see appear in the Rumpelstiltskin telling. That's part of once the series done, and you're on the last book of the series, I was like, hey, wait a second. I could say now where the sword came from, because it works chronologically that this scene could have happened first. So that was something that was kind of like a fun thing to add in. There's another thing also, which is one of my more favorite images from the books. There's a point where there's like a whole dragon war going on. So Damien is there with some of his dwarf friends, Arden, his friend. They're there to help Prince Alex in the war effort. And they're doing more like espionage sort of stuff and kind of behind the scenes sort of stuff. And one of the things they do is they're trying to displace a dragon lair. So what you have to do is you have to remove the gold. And if you get all the gold out and da-da-da, whatever, then the dragons won't come back to that spot. They'll come back to a different spot and then you don't have to worry about them anymore. When they go, and they go to start unloading, because the dragons are all off burning human villages and fighting the humans, Damien's bat, Bram... Oh, we didn't speak about the bat. Okay, we'll speak about the bat. Damien's bat, Bram, disappears behind a corner, and all of a sudden he's coming back, and he's leading a baby dragon. The imagery is just that you see, like, a baby dragon kind of swatting at a bat, and it's supposed to look like a kitten and a butterfly. Like, you know, that kind of imagery, but because in this world, you'd have a baby dragon with a bat. Whatever, I'd like that. But that's when I realized, also, if we're talking about dragons here... In the Cinderella story, there's a scene where a dragon is in it. And wrapping up the series, I realize, oh, there's a war of the dragons that I have a baby dragon here. Wait a second. This baby dragon could be the dragon that appears in the Cinderella story because it works. We see that same scene from Damien's point of view. It plays out a little bit differently than it does for Ella and Cinderella. But this is another one that we have the two parallel scenes occurring. Well, it's the same scene with parallel viewpoints occurring in either book. Okay, back to the bat. Each huntsman has a bond with an animal called their skira. Okay, they create a bond with this animal. Not a familiar, not like, you know, kind of in horror stuff where someone gets raised from the dead and they get their bonded to each other. Not like that. They get to choose an animal from the menagerie. They give it some of the potion, the enhancing potion. And then they have their animal that also has like enhanced capabilities. So Damien chooses a bat, like a little tiny bat. So when he gives him the potion, like the bat grows so much bigger it should be. It's actually, if you can look these bats up, there's a bumblebee bat. That's kind of the bat that he chooses. And then because he gives it the potion, it basically kind of grows into a vampire bat. And the bat's name is Bram. So if you get that, he's named after Bram Stoker, the author of Dracula. So yeah, so that's a good fun fact for us to end off with. Recapping a little bit, we have themes of duty, responsibility, we have a sense of control of self, we have a sense of perception of what it means to just be a man, as in to accept that there's a struggle there, what it means to have, that if we are our values and our skill sets and all these sort of things, this is who we are, and it's not the profession we use them in, but who we are will be applied to the profession or the role that we fill. We didn't go too much into it, but we also have the idea actually of like a harsh kindness versus a kind cruelty. Damien and the huntsman, they see themselves as when they have to go and quote-unquote remove the rotten apples. You have to take out one to protect the many in the kingdom. That's kind of what their role is. They believe in immediate punishment for things done. There's a lot of other elements to that, but that you're going to have to get the book to find out more about that. We also have some things with Lila and fear, what she's willing to do, how she tries to face her own fears, and how that turns her. She has a certain kind of fierceness to her. She's described often as like lightning. So lightning is so beautiful, but it's also so powerful and fiery and jagged and almost dangerous. That's kind of the way Lila is described. Instead of more of like a sweet prettiness or like a sweetness or like even the kindness that we have with Kiara. And anyway, yeah, that's it. Once again, highly encourage you. I hope now that you've heard this, you can either follow along if you've read the book and you'll see where these different points are. Or I, of course, this is biased, but highly, highly encourage you to get the books, audiobook, ebook, or in print. Read it. I hope you enjoy it. Share it with your peoples. Tell everybody about it. And thanks so much for joining us. This was a bonus episode of Oh My Word podcast featuring Behind the Scenes of Heart of a Hunter by E.L. Tenenbaum. To find out more about Heart of a Hunter and the End of Ever After series, please visit eltenenbaum.com. To find out more about Oh My Word podcast and all the great stuff we're up to, please follow us on Instagram at Oh My Word podcast. Subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts, or even check us out on YouTube. Music is by Tim Burke. Thank you so much for joining us. Catch you next time.